Good morning slash nearly afternoon, everybody. This is Windows Client WCL 413, avoiding the end of days, or more precisely, avoiding the end of days, getting off XP right now. Thank you for coming along. I know that every session, every time slot at Tech Ed Australia is always pretty packed, so we really do appreciate you coming along. Quick introduction as to who we are. My name is James Bannon. I'm a solutions architect with DillageNet, and I'm also an enterprise client management, formerly a CCM, like Prince, MVP.
My name is Kent Agerlund, and unlike James, I'm not from Australia. Maybe you can hear that on my accent. I'm from Denmark, and those of you who do not know where Denmark is, I can say that we kind of stole away the Australian princess, so she's actually soon to become queen in Denmark, which is kind of cool, so thank you for her. Really nice. And just like James, I'm also a enterprise client management MVP.
Now, we also have some swag. Kent has lugged some very decent swag across all the way from Denmark via the States, so we need to do him a favor and get rid of it. We have some USB travel speakers, which are pretty damn cool, and we've also got a second edition of Kent's book, which is System Center 2012 Configuration Manager SP1, Mastering the Fundamentals. Absolutely a book that you want to have. So we will be giving those away during the course of the session today. So ask your questions, and you may get some swag. All right. We're going to kick off. We're going to look at... Well, basically, the reason why you're all here, which is presumably to get off XP. Quick show of hands, you do want to get off XP, right? Yes? You're not just here to revel in the misery of others who are still on XP? No? You sadistic puppies. All right. We figured anyone here who's not actually administering XP is either lost or just really sadistic. So we're going to go through the realities of getting off XP. We're not going to make the case as to why, because we're assuming that you know why. And we're going to basically give you the benefit of our experience as much as we can. So Kent and I have done a lot of XP migrations to Win 7, now to Windows 8, using a variety of tools, variety of customers, variety of industries. And we want to enable you guys, after this event, to go home on Monday to your respective desks and get productive instantly in your migration piece. And you will need to, because time's of the essence.
So, as James is saying, you should really get off XP the sooner the better. The date is up there, April 8th. And I was actually, when we wrote this slide here, was kind of how should I lead in? And I was thinking of singing a little of Frank Sinatra, you know, the end is near, but I'm not going to do that. But that's how it is. And what we have in the session here is a bunch of tools, most of them already available. Some of the community tools that we are going to demonstrate will be available throughout the week. And it doesn't really matter if you plan to migrate to Win 7 or Win 8 or Win 8.1, the tools will work on all of those platforms. But as James was saying, we really need to get moving here.
Now, this is the environment. This is the work style that Windows XP was built for. We are so not here anymore. If you're still running XP, if you still have people who absolutely desperately want to stay on XP who can't see the need, you show them this and say, this is you. You really want to be this guy? No, of course you don't. We need to get off. We absolutely need to get off.
So the reality today, and I ran into that Saturday evening when I took off from LA and went to Sydney. It was a 15-hour flight, give and take. And I was lucky enough to have internet access on board. So I just booted up my, turned on my Surface device. And I think I kind of worked for 7 hours, got a lot of email done, could remote into my office. And actually, due to the time changes, I could actually have some live communication with some of my colleagues, which is kind of funny because for them it was Sunday back in Copenhagen. But it kind of worked. And those are the expectations that not only my manager have, but also my customer have today, that they don't expect that they could get me anytime, 24 hours a day, but they do expect that I will be able to answer mails also outside normal business hours. I mean, that's just how customers are. BYOD, I've been around in the IT industry since 89. And I remember a year ago, we had a huge discussion about that in my office, and I was like, BYOD, that's fine. It won't happen until like 2, 3, 4 years from now. But it caught up on me like half a year ago, and I realized it doesn't really matter if I believe in it or not. It's there, and we need to embrace that. We need to get started. We need to plan for that, because a lot of our customers are already doing that. So if we don't do it, then a competitor of ours will just go ahead and do it, and then we will lose a lot of business. So Windows XP really won't assist me there. Last night, when the welcome reception was over, I went home, and then I thought, well, I'm going to do a little walk down memory lane. So I actually installed Windows XP Service Pack 2 just to kind of see the limitations that I would run into. And the first one, when I tried to join it to my domain, a 2012 R2 preview domain, I got a lot of issues. Did a quick search on the internet, and I saw I was not alone on that, and then I just kind of left it there. I'm not saying that you won't be able to join it to the domain, but with the policies that I had at that point, it wasn't possible. Then I said, okay, let me go ahead and get a Config Manager client installed on that one. And again, boom, wouldn't work. I need to at least have Service Pack 3. So I went ahead and installed Service Pack 3, and then I took a look at the release date for Service Pack 3, 2008. It's almost a 6-year-old service pack. And I can easily imagine if we have to support that operating system next year and the year after, we will run into similar issues. There will be a lot of devices where we won't be able to run XP, a lot of applications where they don't even want to enable the support, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, we all thank the operating system, but I think it's time to put it into a retirement home somewhere nice on the coast, and then start focusing on something else.
And look, just to give you guys a bit of a perspective on the timeframes that we are talking. So April 8, 2014 sounds like a fair way off. There's a lot that's going to occur between now and then. But let's actually put that into context, into a business framework. So we're talking 7 months, okay? How many projects can you spin up and see through to completion in 7 months? Specifically, that's 216 days. Strip out the weekends, and you're talking about 154 weekdays. Strip out things like public holidays, Christmas, Boxing Day, New Year's. If you're in Victoria, there's a horse race. So you're really probably looking at about 145 working days. Now, let's say you have 1,000 seats. That's not huge in this environment. You're going to need to do 5 to 6 migrations per day, every day, from Monday, when you get back. You ready to do that? Were you planning on taking any time off? Were you planning on having a life? Maybe you weren't. Maybe you pay someone not to have a life. I don't know. Lucky you. But we are not talking very much time at all. Not at all.
That's not true.
It is possible. It's true. What are the real implications? So let's say April 8 hits, you haven't migrated. What are we going to do? Security. There are no more security updates. That's it. You're not going to get any more. In WSUS, in SCCM SUP, you will be able to get the security updates up to April the 8th, but nothing afterwards, because there won't be any. Device drivers, you try to get some new hardware, your company has a mandate that must have an XP SOE on it, good luck finding device drivers for an unsupported operating system. You are going to struggle. Image creation and maintenance, the tools are just moving ahead, forging ahead. We've got SCCM 2012 R2 coming out in October, MDT 2013. It's going to get harder and harder and harder to do image creation and maintenance on XP. You're probably going to have to maintain some sort of legacy deployment environment for it to work properly. You don't want to have to uplift XP stuff. It's just too much time, too much effort. And of course, if none of that is enough of an incentive, there will be zombies. Okay, get off XP, otherwise it is the apocalypse. Although that's probably a consultant who has to come into your environment and handle XP. So if nothing else, do it for the consultants. We are a delicate breed. Now, so obviously prep is the key. Quick show of hands, who is actually migrating off XP right now? You've got a project in place, you're doing it, all the work's occurring. All right, so that's about half of you. Okay, no, it's not too bad. The rest of you?
Does that mean that the other half has
you're
no
not?
Plans for that?
Show of hands if you haven't even started. Can I go back to that slide? No, I won't do that. Okay, fair enough. Well, obviously, look, the biggest tip I can give you right here, right now, is that you can't drive a project like this from the middle. So if you're here, you've got users over there, you've got management over there, and you're here, you know what needs to be done, but the other guys are not listening to you, that's going to make life really, really hard. It can't be driven from the middle. You have to prep. So normally, in a nice big environment with lots of teams and lots of money, you'd have your project management office, and then we'd have an application management team, because obviously application management, application compatibility is a big deal. The amount of crap that we've picked up over time in our XP images will need to be gone through. It's as simple as that. Maybe most of it we don't need, maybe a lot of it we still do, but you've got to go through it. Application management and application compat is one of the things that I see time and time again derailing an XP migration project, because people have only focused on the deployment and the config of the new SOE, and they haven't thought of the applications that go onto it. But I'll come back to that in more depth. Your infrastructure readiness. Whatever your SOE is that you are moving to, can your infrastructure handle it? So a number of times I've done an engagement where we're looking at a Windows 7 SOE, and we've looked at the backend infrastructure, and it's all Server 2000. Like, really? You really want to do this? God, stay on XP. Jeez. Deploy Ubuntu. No, I didn't say that. You need repeatable processes. It's tempting, it's very tempting, and I know I've fallen foul of this myself, when you know that there is a particular task that needs to be done, you're thinking, well, I could spend 2 days, 3 days, maybe a week, putting together a process by the end of which I haven't actually migrated anyone, I haven't done anything tangible, but I will have something that I can just automate and repeat, and then I can churn through whatever it is, user state backup, compatibility checks, assessment on machines, and I can run through that really, really fast. Occasionally, it's tempting just to say, I don't have a week to set aside. I'm just going to go and do the work. And then you do this one little task that maybe takes 5 minutes, and you think, yeah, I'm fine. And then after you've done it for maybe the 150th or 200th time, and it's 2 weeks later, you're thinking, I should have done a repeatable process. Resist the temptation not to automate your processes. Do it. It will save you so much work. Have an image engineering team. You can start this now. We're going to look at some at what can be done around MDT and SCCM. If you're not sure whether SCCM, if you're using that, and I recommend that you do, obviously, is going to handle your SOE or it's ready for it, or you need to do some uplift or whatever it is, fine. Don't worry about it. Use MDT. Spin it up on a laptop with VirtualBox, okay? You can start your image building right now. Spin it up in MDT, import it into SCCM. This part of it does not need to wait. You can do that instantly. And finally, the deployment. How are you actually going to get it out there? What are the implications? Are you in one big office where everyone's got a gig link, or have you got satellite sites somewhere out in the bush on a satellite uplink? How are you going to handle every single site? Now, this is, of course, the optimal sort of project environment, but hands up if the application management team, the infrastructure readiness team, the image engineering team, and the deployment team is you. There we go. And the project management office is your boss going, are we ready yet? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's why preparation is so absolutely critical. All of this is really nice, but often it's you, and it's you driving from the middle, pushing from the middle, and it can't be done. I'm sorry to say that. It cannot be done. There is plenty of technical work that you can do, and we will assist you to do this, but you also need to be aware that in any migration off XP, there is a very significant business component. You need to engage stakeholders because they are actually going to need to do some work and they are going to need to make some decisions. You can't do it all for them as much as that might be everyone's preference. And the result at the end of this is that you've got a serious you have a serious investment. You've made a proper investment in your infrastructure, in your organization, that if you at a later stage want to move to 7 to 8, 8 to 8.1, 8.1 to data, whatever comes next, you can go back to this. It's not a one-off. A lot of organizations say, well, I'm not going to spend money migrating off XP because it's XP, it's dead money, isn't it? No, not if you do it properly, because you can come back to it time and time again. There is proper ROI on an investment like this. Investment in your time, investment in your processes, investment in your people. So, what tools do you need? These are the must-haves, okay, the absolute must-haves. You should have the assessment and planning toolkit. Now, before everyone goes, oh, yeah, we've heard about that one before, have you really? Have you looked at it? Have you looked at what it can do? For the guys who had their hands up earlier, where the project is yet to initiate, I'll show you this stuff. This will give you information that you currently don't have. That is valuable. More than that, it is free. A lot of times there's a bit of a perception that the value of a tool is commensurate to how much you paid for it. Therefore, exactly what good is a free tool? And we're here to tell you, incredibly valuable. Microsoft have given you the tools, you can use them, they're worth it. The application compatibility toolkit, given that your applications can completely derail your XP migration, this is something you want to get into. It's not that hard. One thing that I will say though, is that if you are the only guy doing all of this stuff, you want to delegate this part, if possible. Application compat is a serious piece of work. If you get the chance to go to any of Chris Jackson's sessions, I highly recommend that you do that. Even if he's not talking at compat, just go along anyway because it's really cool. But he has some serious advice about the implications of handling application compatibility, but this can be a full-time job. So you can be doing this and migrating off nothing else. You need MDT. You really, really want MDT. It is a full deployment mechanism, full deployment infrastructure, and it's free. Why would you not want it? It is awesome, and you can start using it instantly. And because we're a CCM MVPs, I'm sorry, ECM MVPs, we highly recommend that you use Configuration Manager 2012. Actually, we do recommend you do that anyway for the main reason that it provides you the infrastructure. It gives you the heavy lifting capability. It gets agents out into your environment. It lets you automate. It gives you inventory. It gives you full visibility and control over your environment. Don't be too afraid of implementing something like this. For the purposes of a migration, and I've done CCM implementations where all they've wanted is inventory, that's it. You're generally talking a single site server, agents out, very, very simple implementation. It can be spun up in a week. It can really be done in a week. And you have something valuable and useful that you can then leverage and expand upon. Putting CCM into your environment, you don't have to sit down and go, all right, now we want software updates, and we want application management, we want compliance management, we want wake on LAN, and all of a sudden it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Just think, I want a server, I want some agents. You can do that quickly and relatively inexpensively. So, let's take a look at some of the important tools. Here we go. So, this is the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit. Anyone use this? A couple of hands, yeah. It's about normal. It's seen as a bit of a lightweight tool. It doesn't really do much. Actually, no, it does. It gives you visibility into your environment, which you may not otherwise have. What it's designed to do is to jump out into your environment, query your domain-joined machines. That is a requirement. Machines need to be domain-joined because you're going to authenticate against them and get remote WMI. It's going to grab inventory off them, pull it back. It's running SQL Express behind this, so it can be spun up on anything, laptop, VM, it doesn't really matter. It's completely agentless, so it makes no changes into your wider environment. It then assesses that information that it pulls back and gives you reports about, okay, of the machines which I looked at, are they ready to go to Win 7? Maybe you're considering a refresh rather than a hardware replace. Are they ready? Is there enough RAM? Is there enough disk space? Will it work? Office, maybe you are currently running Office XP. It's possible. I hope not, but it's possible. Can you update to the latest version if you were looking at an update? Obviously, as far as what it is capable of looking at, there's a heck of a lot in there. So Microsoft keep this product very up to date. It can assess a heck of a lot. Are your machines ready to be virtualized? What databases have you got out there? Can we update them? Are there going to be any issues? But we're going to focus on the desktop side. So we're going to say, all right, I want to look at some inventory data, and I'm going to look at Windows computers. Now, I could be looking at Linux and Unix. Zoom in. Linux and Unix, VMware, AD Exchange. There's a lot of options. All right, so next I'm going to use ADDS. Actually, no, I tell a lie. You could actually do this on workgroup machines. My bad. So, SCCM Lab. It's my domain account. It's my password. Next, I'm only particularly interested in 1OU, which is that one there. And I want to apply some account credentials. This is going to talk to WMO. Next, finish. It's going to go through, find the machines, and inventory as much as it can. Now, obviously, I've only got a small number of machines in a self-contained environment, so it's pretty fast. In a wider environment, it's got to find all the machines, it's got to talk to them, it's got to query them. So it may take longer. Well, it will take longer. And thank you, that's done. So here I can take a look. I've got options here for Windows 7 readiness, Windows 8 readiness. I've got 7 which are ready and 1 which needs a RAM upgrade. 1 which needs an upgrade. Now, I believe that's actually because it's a virtual machine. It's running dynamic memory, and it's currently registered at like 256 meg of RAM. So it's going to say, no, I don't like that. So you do get some nice, useful information immediately. But the real power of the toolkit is this bit up here, where we can say, generate a readiness report. Actually, let's just jump back and let's say Windows 8 readiness, because that's where we want to go, isn't it? Let's say generate a report. Now, what's occurring under the hood is that MAP is grabbing some pre-configured Excel and Word templates, and it's grabbing all of that discovered inventory info, and it is creating for you business documents, which are ready. It's done an assessment, and now we've got a proposal around Windows 8. We've got information about Windows 8 Enterprise. We've got an assessment summary, hardware analysis, any recommended hardware upgrades, operating system summary, applications. There's a lot of information which it pulls in to a nice prepackaged template that you can go, ta-da, aren't I fantastic, take a look at this. Now, if you don't have anything at all, if you're yet to kick this off, this is a fantastic place to start. This gives you information without making any changes to your environment. Now, you've got some more information about your environment. Awesome. Now we want to get into the compatibility toolkit. As I said, your applications, if they are incompatible, it can derail your migration. I had a query from a colleague just before this session actually saying, oh, so does Config Manager 2012 R2 and MDT 2013 support the deployment of XP? Well, I think it does. I hadn't actually looked at it, but why on earth would you want to do that? He said, well, we're 1,500 seats, but 100 of them have an application that absolutely has to be run, and it only runs on XP. So for the moment, we are still we want to uplift to the latest, but we still have to be able to deploy XP. Now, that sucks. It really does. It isn't fun. But maybe there's something you can do about that. So what the compatibility toolkit does, similar to MAP, it runs off a SQL instance. That can be SQL Express, or it can be a full version of SQL. And what it does, it allows you to generate a couple of data collection packages, either, let's fire this up, you can either have an inventory collection or runtime analysis. Now, in my environment, I've gone through and I've already run a couple of inventory collection packages. And what it does, it essentially generates an MSI. So it's just an installable MSI, which you then push out into your environment using whatever method you prefer, AD, GPO, SCCM, it doesn't really matter. What each machine will then do is that it will run a self-inventory, and it will then upload all of that to a UNC location. The compatibility toolkit will then run an assessment on all the log files which it finds, and then you can then run analysis against that. So as you can see in this environment, it successfully processed logs. The last time it did it was just earlier this morning. No errors, everything's awesome. So if I jump out and I go into analyze, I can now take a look at all of the applications which have been found. Now I deployed this onto a couple of XP machines and a Windows 8.1 just for laughs. It will bring back everything, like everything. If it's installed, it brings it back. Now, this generally means that there's stuff in here that is not relevant to you. But having done a number of migrations, it's better to have too much information than not enough. And you can quite easily strip stuff out. What we can then do is say, all right, I'm interested in being able to move up to Windows 8. I have already done, I've already got my list of applications. Now I'm going to do a send and receive against Microsoft. So it's going to share a little bit of information, do a send. And then it's essentially going to sync my application list against the centralized application compatibility toolkit DB in Microsoft and bring back community and vendor metadata. So if I have a particular version of an application and a vendor has told Microsoft, yep, that version is compatible on Windows 8, this will sync back down and I can see, yep, it's good, no problem. Maybe the vendor hasn't done that, but other people have, and they have actually done a rating and said, yep, this one works, or it installed, or it was fine on 32-bit, but not on 64. You can get all of this information back. So one of the ones which I did in my second inventory run was access in Office XP. Now, why would I do that? How many of you know in your environment whether there is a user buried somewhere who's running an Access 97 database that it turns out an entire department is completely dependent upon? Yeah, it's fun and games, isn't it? A compatibility uplift is not necessarily just about the application, it's about the data files that application produces. That is a classic example, and too many times I've gone into a customer and I've gone, okay, so what version of Office are you moving to? 2010. Cool. What version of Office are you running? 2007. So far, so good. Is that 2007 across the board? Yeah, we think so. Really? You think so? Do you know? This will give you that information. I mean, the guys of you who raised your hands, you're the lucky ones, because you know. Imagine those who don't. You need this information. So Access has come back and go, you know what? Not on 64, oh, it doesn't even work on 32-bit. 32-bit, 64-bit, So you can very quickly get an assessment and say, okay, I know that there's an instance of Office XP out there. I can work out where. It's going to tell me that. I can then go to the user and find out why they have access. Maybe it's just because it was installed at some point in the past and it never got stripped off. That's okay. That's easy. That's much more preferable to, oh yeah, I open this every morning from a shortcut, and because of this, I've shared my desktop with half the department, and we rely on it for our timekeeping. It's like, oh, that's bad. We don't want to know that. So the compatibility toolkit will give you power over your environment. Map and act. Look them up. They are free. They are so easy to install and to implement, and they will give you visibility and power. Right, let's kick on. Make that, is that on two? Sorry, my bad. One. Helps if you hold the clicker the right way around. Now, just before we sort of move into apps, does anyone have any questions as to where we're up to so far? Anything we've covered? Anything that you want to know? Sir? So the you can certainly. So the question was: does the assessment and planning toolkit give you a bit of a breakdown versus 32 or 64? You can certainly. I don't know if it does architecture. If it does an architecture breakdown, I need to check that. But certainly, you can put in checks to say I'm only really interested if they have a certain amount of RAM or less or a certain amount of. You know, so if they have 1 gig of RAM, tell me. If they have 4, I don't care. Yeah. So yeah, it gives you a certain amount of granularity. When you want to get really in depth into your environment, that's where we're talking something like SCCM. Yes, sir.
Just a quick question about the application compatibility toolkit. What are the
Yep, sorry. So the question is, what are the requirements around the compatibility toolkit? You're talking about from the perspective of if you need to spin it up. SQL Express, which is inbuilt, I believe. So it'll simply install it. I think it's, I don't know if it's 2005 or something. It's a really, really lightweight one. It can be installed on a client operating system. So spin up a VM, install Act. Away you go. It's ready to go. Mm-hmm. So, the question was around storage requirements. It's pretty minimal. I'll just take a quick look at where the log files get dumped to. So, it's not CCM. Actually, no, over here. So, these are my ACK logs. So, for each machine that gets processed, we're talking about a very, very small amount of information. It all gets compressed. Most of it's text-based anyway, so it compresses pretty hard. The database, really, really small. So yeah, a few gig and you'll be fine. That's a valid question. I like that. I think that wins you a speaker. Kent, would you do the honors? All right, so you've run the compatibility toolkit. You've got some information about your applications. It's not looking great. Actually, I attended a session that Mr. Jackson did at MMS, and he said something quite interesting. He said that in most migration scenarios, probably about 98% of your apps are going to be fine. The problem is the 2% are the line of business ones that everyone relies on and that your business runs on. That's where it gets problematic. So that 2% will cause you a huge amount of pain. So what are your options here? You can upgrade to a new version, assuming that there is one, assuming that the vendor still exists, and assuming that they have actually released one that's compatible. That's obviously the preferable approach, nice and easy. You could go to a web version, if there is one. If it's a line of business type application, that's been developed internally, then maybe that's not an option. Maybe the company doesn't want to invest in that, but it is a valid option. It's also where a lot of businesses are moving to. Back in the data storage on Azure, major applications, web front end, new way of using apps. MedV, if Microsoft Enterprise Desktop Virtualization, if you have software assurance and MDOP, which is Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack, I think you can get MedV. This is not a solution. This is a bridge. So what this allows you to do is actually run an image of XP in essentially a virtual PC environment and allows you to stream incompatible apps out onto the desktop of Windows 7 or Windows 8 so that your users can keep using those applications until they can get uplifted. So the purpose of MedV, and look, I must admit, Kent and I don't really work with MedV because the management of yet another XP image can be somewhat painful, but if the choices are migrate or don't migrate, and MedV is the differentiating factor, it can be worth it. You can virtualize the app. Zenapp, AppV. AppV especially is really, really good at overcoming compatibility issues because all you have to do is sequence it once. Then you can push it out. I remember I was working for a school a while ago. We were uplifting from XP to Win 7. There were some applications that were like 12 years old, and I was looking forward to them dying. I wanted it not to work because they were horrible. And I thought, no, I'll just check whether they can be virtualized, and bugger me, they worked. So I had to keep supporting them, which I wasn't thrilled about. But application works. And finally, Remediate. There are shims that you can get. Maybe you can write your own shims. Maybe you can engage with a developer to come in and assist. Occasionally, with a lot of applications, the compatibility problems are not as big as you think. It's simply because at some point in the past, there was a hard-coded check for a particular version of Windows, which is preventing installation. You can overcome that. Okay, maybe it's not as bad as you think. So,
whenever I kind of start a project, it's always something like, what kind of applications do you really need? Do you need all the applications tomorrow that you have today? I cannot count the number of times where I've been sitting in a meeting and the customer is saying, yeah, but we need to be able to re-image the machines and they need to have the exact same apps installed after. And I go, why? I mean, if I re-image my machine, I don't want to have the same apps installed again. I don't even know what kind of apps I have installed right now. So we need to figure out what apps are required, what apps the user require, and what apps the user requires because he or she is a member of a role. And then we need to be able to make the deployment of those apps so easy as possible. And also, when you migrate from XP, I mean, some of the applications that you have today in your XP environment, they might be built into the operating system. I had a meeting with a customer, and they said, well, we have a lot of apps. I said, yeah, come on, shoot me. How many apps do you have? 24,000. I was like, okay, seriously, you do have a lot of apps. And then what I usually say is that being people-centric, that's not about installing all applications that you can install. That's about giving users access to install the applications when they need to. And within SCCM, if I just go into my demo here, here you go. What I have done here is I have just done a Pixie boot. And what I get in here is a front end, a utility, which will, it's not available yet, but it will be available within the week. And in here, I can control some of the app scenarios that I have. For instance, I can go down here and say, well, my primary user for this one here will be Julie. So when I hit install down here, what the front end will do is it will create the user's the computer account in Config Manager, place it in the correct collection, all based on the role that I will select in a few seconds, and then assign Julie as the primary user. And it will do that by using the variables we have. Once I've done that, I can go into my app model, and then I can go in and specify, well, the requirement rules for these 25 applications is that you need to be the primary user. And I've already taken care of that when I started the install of my operating system. The other thing I have would be my role. So roles is one of the hardest thing to actually design when you're doing a migration project, but it's absolutely worth it. How many different roles do you have in your organization? And hopefully you can break it down to something like maybe 5 or 10 roles and then assign applications based on those roles. And we can do that very easily in a task sequence, but we need to be able to specify the roles. So what I do in here is I just assign a computer name. I select the role, so I'll just say, go ahead, you will be the standard. I'll select some additional thing like, I want to use USMT for this process, I want to use the English language, and then just click install. So right now in the background, it's going in and figuring out if I have an older object of this, and then it's going to create the object, add it to the old systems collections, and after that, add it to the collection that I did select. It usually takes a few seconds. Of course, if you're doing a refresh, you might want to pre-stage all of these, and you can do that. This is kind of a bare metal. So what's going on in the background here? And let me just create this application here. What's going on in the background, if I look at my device collections, I'm running R2 preview, so it's just knowing that this would happen here. Let's just start it up again.
Kent, you said that this utility was going to be made available. Do you mean it's going to be made available for free for people to use?
While we're waiting for this to spin up again, the utility here that I just showed you is in my opinion a great way of getting started. It's super easy to actually begin deploying because all you need to do is just need to run this installer. When you run this installer here, what we will do is we will prompt you for a username, and that username will be the one that will actually create the objects in the database. So you just need to create that user in Active Directory. Once you click install here, then we will assign the user the appropriate role in Configuration Manager, so it only works with Config Manager. It will create the boot image. It will create the task sequence that I'm going to show you. So you basically just need to go in and assign a few variables. Of course, there are plenty of other tools out there. You have MDT, you have the MDT database. This is just another option. But let me take a look at what actually happened here. So I did create my computer object, and we are using a mix of folders and collections in here. So I did select my standard. And if I look at my standard collection, you'll be able to see here that the computer object I just created is actually found in here. If I look at one of the other computers, those are the ones that I actually installed earlier today, then you will see here that the primary user is defined. It's defined through the process, and this is something you can do manually. The HTA here is actually just doing this for you. And if I look at my object itself, what we did when we created this one here is, if I go into variables, you can see that I'm using the variables that you can manually type in here. So this is, for us, a very easy way to actually control what gets installed on the different devices here.
And so what's the importance of assigning a primary user during OSD?
So that was a good question. You can take a speaker.
Oh, yeah.
So the importance of that is, I'm not a big fan of just installing all the applications. So if you need an application that is not part of your role, then that's fine. Then we can assign it to you as a primary user. And the way that I would do that, let's see if I actually got my application created that I started just before. I did. This is, I don't know if you noticed, but I had a PowerShell script that created the application here in the beginning. So in order for me to tie this application here to the primary user, I'm just creating a global condition or requirement rule. So there are different categories in here. There are device, custom, and user. And when I look at my user, there is actually just one requirement rule, and that is primary device equals true. So by setting this one here, and by looking at my deployment, I might deploy this to all workstations or to all something else, never to all systems. That story, I'm pretty sure you all know. But my requirement rules will prevent the application from being downloaded and installed if you're not part of, if you're not the primary user. And you can be the primary user on multiple devices. I just checked this morning and I was actually the primary user on 32 devices in my company. The other one we have, if I go back in here, that is the roles. So if you noticed in the HTA here, I think I clicked install.
I think you did. Yeah.
So it actually works.
It works.
So I have another one here. Let me just go in and select. So if you notice here, my roles in here are actually dynamic. So the neat thing about this one here is right now I have three roles. If I go into my config manager environment and then just go ahead and create me a new collection, because we actually have role number four. So this fourth role here would just be ticket Australia, limited to all systems. If I go back to my HTA now and just perform a refresh, then you can see now I have ticket Australia in here. And what I can do on my collection is I can go in and specify some variables, and now I can control, well, if you are assigned that role, then go ahead and install these applications. And the way we do that, if I go to my software library, my task sequences. When you go ahead and install the HTA, it will actually create a deploy task sequence. You don't have to use that at all. It just contains a few examples in here. For instance, you can see down here we have the default roles that we actually created. So I have a role here called software developer, and if I look at my options, the way we control that is simply by adding a collection variable saying, okay, if you equal developer, then go ahead and do the steps that we have down here. So I could go in and add general, install my application, and select my toolkit. So these are two ways to control the primary user and control the roles that you have. A way to control that you want to get the exact same applications installed again as you had yesterday, that you can actually do with MDT. There is a limitation in MDT that it actually only looks at packages, but Jason Sandys, a good friend of ours, he actually has a solution there where he goes in and creates a new stored procedure in the MDT database. So it can also use application. So it will actually look at your inventory data that you have for that specific box, and then it's going to reinstall the same applications again.
So we're going to move on from applications to that other joyous aspect of desktop management, which is the user state. Backups. Before we do that, does anyone have any questions so far on what we've seen around applications, around some of the tools that you can do with SCCM and with Kent's awesome HTA? Yes, sir.
What is the end of life of server between 2003, and is it a viable option for, given the similarity of kernel to the XP 2003 server, to host apps via strict RIDP on the server 2003?
So the question is, what's the end of life on Windows Server 2003? Is that it? Or SP3? Yeah, I don't know the specific end of life. So XP Service Pack 3 is April 8.
I think it's 2015.
2015 on server 2003, is it?
Yep.
Okay. So the question is then, is it viable, say, to take some of your applications, given that if they work on XP, they're likely to work on server 2003 and then use Zenapp or something along those lines. Is that the gist of it? Yep, okay. Hey, if that works, perfectly viable. Yep, absolutely. If you are using something like Zenapp 6.5, I don't know if that's supported on server 2003, but if it is, Citrix have actually developed a connector for Zenapp 6.5 for SCCM 2012, and you can do your Zenapp deployments from SCCM. So yeah, sure, absolutely. If that works, go for it. No problem.
So you know, Zenapp 5 is only supported on 2003, that's end of life. 6.5 is not supported on anything other than 2008 R2.
Right. So in other words, you could install it, but you'd have to use an end of life product to push it out. So that, thank you to the person who knows more about Citrix than me. I think that guarantees you a portable speaker, sir. Yes, I don't recommend using it either.
So,
yep.
You can spin up and use the VMware spin.
There are, so here we're talking, we're focusing particularly around applications or solutions which are either free or which you're likely to have as part of software assurance and MDOP. There are obviously a huge range of third-party applications and services which you may have access to, you may not, which you can then leverage to get you past the problem of incompatible applications. So a couple that I tend to use is AppDNA quite a bit, and AppSense, ones which we tend to rely on quite a bit. They do a great job. But given that I'm sort of not here to spruik a particular vendor, everyone's got their own preference. There are a load of alternatives which may or may not work for you. And depending on the status of your project, depending on whether there's any budget, if it's something that you already own, cool. If it's not, then it may not be an option. All right, so let's have a bit of a chat about user state. Again, this is one that time and time again, I've gone into a deployment of XP, a migration. And the project manager said, no, I've got it 100% confirmed. We do not need to back up user data. Don't need it, not a problem. Said, cool, have you got an email from the CEO saying that he doesn't want his data backed up? Has his secretary been informed? Because you are going to get called out about this. Have you prepared? User data is one of those horrible, horrible things. And given that we're often talking about XP, which could have, in theory, been on the same machine for 10 years if your users are really unlucky, the amount of data that could be on there is just horrendous. And often, even though you may have a corporate policy which says you shall not store personal data on your machine, and that corporate policy is up there on the internet where all your users go every day to check whether there's been an update to the corporate policy, they do it anyway. And if you wipe their machines and their iTunes database is gone or their pictures of their chihuahua, they're coming knocking on your door. Part of a successful migration is that at the end of it, your users are happy. This, not necessarily your managers, not, and it won't be you, because you'll be a lot grayer and a bit gaunt and needing some sun. But as long as your users are not screaming, it was a successful migration. Deleting their personal data is not a way to win friends and influence people. So User state migration tool, USMT, which is part of the assessment and deployment kit, which is also what the application compatibility toolkit is part of too, so it's part of a complete download, gives you some options in terms of at least assessing the state of user data throughout your environment. You may not need to back it up. You may not. Good. But there are some things that you can do to at least verify that if you don't back anything up, what would you have lost? Could you do it anyway? Is it worth it? It might be worth it. Okay. So let's just take a quick look at a USMT scenario. I don't spend too much time on this because, to be honest, when it comes to USMT, there's number seven. When it comes to USMT, every solution is effectively a bespoke one. There is no one-size-fits-all approach to user state backup. Some organizations want user state. They're going from two partitions to one, one to two, two to two. Some want hard linking. Some don't. Some want all the business docs. They just can't tell you what those file extensions are, and they expect you to work it out. Others want absolutely everything. They want the MP3s, they want the MP4s, they want the MKVs, you name it, they want it. Then you ask them, no problem, do you want that on the network or off? If you want it on the network, do you have bandwidth? Do you have storage? All of these are fun questions, and they're generally not necessarily technical in nature. They're often business. If a company is going to have to spin up another 2 terabytes of storage just to do user state backup, then that's a very good acid test of whether they really care about the user state backup. But if you have that information to hand and you can present it, you go, this is what we're going to need, do you want to do this? Then you're in a good position and you've covered yourselves. So what I have done in this environment, there are any number of ways of handling user state. It's just a command line tool, okay? Scan state, load state, that's really about it. But what I'm doing here is I want to leverage MDT in order to do an assessment and then potentially trigger a user backup, and then later on I'll do a restore. So what I've got here is a Windows XP machine, XP Service Pack 3, it's got Office 2003, it's got Access, it's got a number of personal files and stuff. And what I'm particularly interested in is an assessment. I want to know if I were to do a backup on this machine, how much would it need? How much storage would it need? Why is that useful? Because perhaps it'll do an assessment and it'll come back and say 100 meg. You go, oh, okay, well, there's not much there. That's a few files here and there. I could potentially do a backup of that. If it came back and said 100 gig, thinking, what the hell has this user got? So you can then jump back in and you can be proactive, talk to the user and say, why do you have 100 gig? And were you seriously planning on us backing that up? And let's have a serious talk about the value of USB hard drives. So what this is doing behind the scenes, if I jump out into my MDT console, I've got a couple of task sequences here. And these task sequences are actually exactly the same as each other, except one does a backup and one does not. How do I check that? In each one, I've got this step at the top, which is to gather task sequence settings which are specific to that particular task sequence. Have people got experience with MDT? You know about the custom settings INI? A little bit? Okay, so no. Custom settings INI is essentially a text file that says when you run a task sequence, this is the information that you're going to provide. So in this case, I've got an organization name so that the task sequence shows you some nifty information about which task sequence is actually running. I've told it to back up to SCCM01 MDT logs, so all the logs which are generated get pushed up to a UNC share. But if I've got lots and lots of task sequences, I might want some variation between them all. So what I've got instead is, in this case, I've got custom settings underscore capture one. Capture one is the task sequence ID, and I've got a step at the top of the task sequence that says look at custom settings underscore variable, and it just works it out. So I can apply custom settings to each task sequence. Specifically, I've got this information about user data. I've got a UD share, so a user data share. Where's it going to back up to? What's the folder name? I want to make it dynamic. So find the host name of the machine that you're running on and make a folder. And then pass this information through to the USMT scanstate.exe, which is the application which actually triggers a USMT scan. I'm only interested in files, I'm only interested in profiles that are domain users. I'm only interested in users who've logged on in the last 90 days. I want some verbose logging. I want a force overwrite, and I don't want any errors to stop the process. And specifically, /p means run it as if you were going to back it up, but don't back it up. Just write an estimate file instead. And so I've told it exactly where to write that estimate file. So if I jump back in, this is done, no problem. And if I jump into the server, there's my share, and there's my USMT estimate. And if I take a look here, and I take a look at, this is my estimate size. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 6. So the estimate is 348 meg. Okay, not too bad. I'll go, yep, you know what, no problem. That user can go along and actually do a backup. So I'll trigger my deployment share. And user backup process, go. Begin. Okay, so while that's processing, if I take a look at the custom settings for this one, it's nearly exactly the same. It's backing up to the same location. It's only looking at those accounts. It's only looking at accounts that have logged on, but instead of a /p, I've scrapped that because I do want it to back up, and I've got this switch, which is /target Windows 7. Now, this is target Windows 7 or later, so there isn't one for Windows 7 and one for Windows 8. Because you're backing up from XP, if you don't put that in, when it tries to do a restore, some stuff gets put into the wrong location. So you want to run that. But as you can see, it's exactly the same text file underneath, except a slight change. And now, all of a sudden, instead of doing an assessment, it's actually running a backup. So if I jump back out, see how it's processing. User state's being processed. It's copying up, doing a good job. Nearly done. Do, 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 do. Anyway. All right, it's processed and done. So if I jump back into my server, now I have a USMT folder, and I've got a USMT.mig, which is my backup file, 341 meg. So the estimate was pretty bang on. So I've got backup. I'm ready to go. I want to do a restore. So here I am on my Windows 8 box. Now, the restore task sequence in MDT decided to slap me around and not be my friend very late last night. So instead of using a task sequence, I'm actually just going to show another way that you can trigger USMT, which is... it is just a command line. So you could run, let me just paste this in. So in this case, I'm just mapping directly to the deployment share, x64, because we're running Windows 8 x64. USMT is my load state. I'm pointing it to where exactly the data is, and I want some verbose logging in the logs. If it hits any errors, I want it to carry on. And if it restores any local accounts, which it's not, I want them disabled. Go. And now it's going to start. It's going to open up that MIG file. It's going to take a look at what's in there, and it's going to drop it down. Now, because it's actually restoring the user that I'm currently logged on as, it's going to shut down the shell, and it's going to restore some files which are on the desktop and a number of other options too. And it's going to take a couple of minutes to run. Now, because this is a command line tool, you can trigger it from MDT. You can do logon scripts. You can do your own batch scripts. You can do VB, PowerShell. You can create a CCM package. You can very, very easily start gathering information about the state of your user data throughout your environment. You can do that now. And once this is done, here we go, shut down the shell. It's found a number of profiles, it has restored them. So there we go. It's dropped down, I had some shortcuts on the desktop, had a text file with stuff in it. It's dropped down my background. If I hadn't done the target Windows 7, the background wouldn't have worked. If I jump in and take a look in pictures, I've got my pictures there to put those in the right spot. And music too, should be some music in there too. So all done. Nice and easy, ready to go. That whole process can be automated. That is a free tool. There's loads of support, loads of forums.
Can you turn to mine? So, as James is saying, it's a number...
Five. Yeah.
Five. As James is saying, this is basically just a command line tool. So if you go into a, I would say, medium or an enterprise environment and you have a CCM in there, what you can do is you can create a VB script or a PowerShell script that will actually do all of this for you. So my biggest concern when we go into a project is that the manager will say, nope, we don't do user backup. And I'm like, seriously, you don't know what you're talking about, because can you afford not to do a backup? I don't care about your policy. We know from real life that we have data out there. So what I have here is a VB script that will actually go through and run my state with a /p and estimate how much backup we need to take from this specific device. What it will do is it will take that information and store the information in WMI. So knowing Config Manager, I can easily go into WMI and grab that information and make that part of my hardware inventory. So what I've done here is I've taken the script, placed it into the default path where I have my USMT. The script will just be placed in the root. Then in my existing USMT package, when you install Config Manager 2012, you will get a USMT 8 package in here. The only thing I've done is creating a good old-fashioned program. And this program here will basically just run the VB script. So now I can go ahead and deploy this to all my workstations. What happened on the workstation size is this. If I run the scripts, I will just do it manually. So right now, it will just go ahead. And if you look in here in the background, you can see that it's actually running scan state. So what it will do is it will create an entry in WMI, so it's going to create a namespace called IT local. And if I look at that up here in PowerShell, see here, then it's actually going to give me the information in here so I can see what is the size estimate. And just like James have, I can go in and specify, I only want my domain users, I only want the domain users that have been logging on for 90 days and so on. But now when the info is stored in WMI, it's really not that difficult to go back into Config Manager, go to my client settings, and then in my default client settings, go into my hardware inventory, set a class, and then in here, I can go in and connect PC002. And then connect to the correct WMI namespace. So in here, you can see, I don't know if you can see, but I can just zoom up here, that I do have my USMT underscore estimate. So by selecting this one, I will start gathering those inventory data. And now since that's inventory data side by side with all the other inventory data you have in Configuration Manager, means that you can start creating some reports. And now you can go back to the very same manager again and say, okay, I hear what you say, but we actually have a ton of data out there. And it's your decision whether or not we should back that up. So it doesn't have to be super, super difficult. Preparing these demos here, I already did this. So if I look at my current hardware inventory, you can see here that I do collect the GUID, I do collect the date and time, and the size estimate. So if I look at a client here, my PC002, then in my Resource Explorer, for those of you who are not familiar with SCCM or with Config Manager, this is where I can see my my hardware inventory data. And here you can see I have my USMT estimate for that specific machine. Of course, if I want to see a total estimate, I'm going to create a query, I'm going to create a report, and so on and so forth. But creating a package in here seriously took me less than 5 minutes. So usually, companies are running a hardware inventory scan maybe once a day or every third day, meaning that within a week, you will have all the data that you need. This script here, I think we actually have the link on the slides, but this script here can be downloaded. The solution is described and everything, so it can be downloaded from Jason Sandy's blog, and it works right out of the box. I mean, what I did here is exactly the same that I'm doing in production. Can we just swap it back?
Yeah. We've only got a couple minutes left.
We have a few more minutes, and I have a...
Now, Kent wanted to show you about process monitoring. We've got 4 minutes, so...
I can do it in 4 minutes.
Excellent.
The only thing is when I talk really fast, I tend to talk Danish, but I can do that. So monitoring the process. When you're doing a good job, and I mean, you are, then to me it's pretty important that you actually report that back into the organization. And when you want to monitor the OSD process in Configuration Manager, you can use the built-in reports. They're pretty neat. They're okay. You can also use the status messages. Config Manager generates a ton of information that you can go and grab. You can also use the status filter rules. And I do not know how many of you are familiar with status filter rules, but they have been around for years and years. I don't remember if they were actually introduced in SMS 2.0 or in 2003, but it's all the way back then. And what we have here is data from a real migration project. So in here, I can see I have approximately 6,000 refresh going on, and I can see the average deployment time. So I actually get some pretty neat data. And I can dig into this. And then I can say, okay, if I take a look by site and break it down to each site here, what is the default or the average installation time, for instance, in Brisbane or in Munich? And I can dig even deeper here and say, okay, so what does it look like when I go into the Munich site or to the Brisbane site? What is the average installation time for each of these machines? And this is all... something that you can go ahead and download today and implement in your CCM environment, because these solutions here are out there. This solution here is taken from a site called CMSDK, run by a guy from Estonia called Kaido, and he has a step-by-step guide on how you actually implement this, and it's very, very powerful. It took me like 15 minutes to set it up the first time and then go into SCCM and create a status filter rule, but that's all you got to do. Then it will automatically process the script that is generated by the status filter rule every time you start an installation and every time you finish an installation. And when you have that information, you can go ahead and generate the reports in here.
Maybe skip the demo.
Yeah, we'll skip the demo.
So, look, guys, you're not the first people to do a migration, even though sometimes it feels like you might be. You're absolutely not alone. There are fantastic resources out there. Kent's already mentioned a few of them. MVPs like Jason Sandis, those are his the two main places where he blogs. Kent, obviously, from CoreTech, there's a load of tools, some of which he showed you today. You can download, you can implement now, and get really great value out of it. Chris Nackers is an ECM MVP from the States, a bit of an NDT gun as well. Fantastic resources around deployment, and Deployment Bunny. Odd site, but geez, it's got some good content there. So I know obviously it can be hard to find the time to go and read this stuff, but all these guys have done so many deployments. I mean, between us all, what, millions of seats we've rolled out, easy. The knowledge is there, make use of it. Hit us up on Twitter, no problem. Grab the slides at the end, our Twitter handles are up there. And deployment research is another one. Johan Oudmark knows a staggering amount about this stuff, so check it out. And now, don't forget to do your evals. You could win a Sculpt mouse. Remember, don't run off. We have 30 seconds for Q&A. You might get some swag. This is good swag. Kent doesn't want to lug it to New Zealand.
I mean,
loads of resources. The
only thing right after this is actually lunch, and I'm...
Who needs to eat?
Yeah,
come on.
You can always wait. So we will hang around here
for
as long as it takes. And if you have any questions, just feel free to ask them.
And thank you, guys.